Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Do you need heavy equipment or farm equipment? Look no further than Southern Equipment and Parts in Laurel. We have a wide selection of new and used equipment from many top brands. We also offer parts, service, and rentals. Whether you're a contractor, farmer, or just need help around the house, we have what you need. Southern Equipment is your one-stop shop for all farm and heavy equipment. Visit us at 5237 Highway 84 West and southernequipparts.com or call 601-651-4555.
Four, free record on my count. Seven, six, five, four, three, two, roll A, fade up on A.
Southern Miss to the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Hey, we're glad you are. Welcome to another edition of the Eagle Hour. Bob Getty, Luke Johnson, Kelly Sander. We're broadcasting from the First Bank Studios in Laurel and Hattiesburg today. And we're glad you're with us. We've got a great show today. Our buddy Patrick McGee will be joining us from New Orleans a little later to talk about the fire at the Superdome and some other stuff that we think you'll enjoy. Jack Duggan about to join us here in just a moment. Opening segment sponsored by Dickey's Barbecue Pit. Great guys at Dickey's. Great food. You can enjoy it 7 days a week. Next time you're going to plan a catering event, make sure Dickey's is part of that. They can cater any event for you, large or small, for your home, for your church, whatever. Just make sure you choose Dickey's.
And, Bob, did you realize that if you get any of your catered food from Dickey's for your tailgate party, they have a no-rain guarantee?
What's that?
That means it'll be...
It won't rain.
It'll be weather just like this.
Well, there you go. So we want everybody to make sure that you keep Dickies in your plans. All right, Jack Duggan, Sports Information Director at Southern Miss. Always glad to have Jack part of the Eagle Hour. Jack, we've talked a lot this week about the football team and about the struggles offensively, but we really haven't talked to a large degree. It's easy to overlook positives when you're not winning, but boy, this defensive team has played pretty well, and you were telling me that statistically... they're among the nation's leaders going into this game this weekend.
Well, they are, Bob. And again, thanks for having me on. If you look defensively, the Golden Eagles are 12th nationally in total defense. We've only allowed 248.3 yards a game. And you know, if you look at it, we gave up, I think, 300 against South Alabama, 166 against Grambling, and then just 304 last week. So, you know, in the scheme of things and the way that college football is played now, that's pretty salty. So a number 12 ranking is pretty good. You know, especially we've done well in rushing defense, where we've only given up 43.7 yards a game. And that's, again, that's number two in the country. Passing, we've allowed 204.7 yards a game, and we're 60th in that category. So I tell you, it's pretty good defense has played, you know, very well, you know, through the first three games this season.
And Nick Saban's taking notice of that. He did talk about the defensive effort of the Golden Eagles and their ability to stop the run. You're right. That has been the best thing to see. And, you know, Jack, I thought Saturday night, you go into halftime and you're shutting out a pretty solid Troy football team. I don't think the score was indicative of how well the defense played throughout the night Saturday.
No, I don't think so either. Maybe a play or two on that first drive where you know they struggled a little bit, but other than that, I thought defensively, you know, in all three games has been, you know, phenomenal for us, and that's everywhere. That's up front, that's, you know, linebacker, and that's on the back end. I mean, I think it's showing, and you know, we're starting to turn people over too, and forcing some turnovers. So, you know, I think it's just, you know, I think they're going to be a fun unit to watch. I think, you know, look at the kicking game too. The kicking game has been really good. Briggs Bourgeois has been fantastic, kicking it off. He's done really well. I think, you know, in the field goal, I know he had one missed off the upright, from 41, on Saturday, but you know, he also missed a career long 50. So everything else he's hit. You know, he missed his first extra point of his career. Unfortunately, got blocked in that ball game. But he's played well. Mason Hunt, our punter, has played phenomenal. You know, this guy who really, you know, he started the season last year, you know, punted in that first game, and then Griffin Fleming came in and took the job the rest of the way. But, you know, he came back this year, won that job, and over the first three games has really booted the ball very well for the Golden Eagles.
One of the things you have to keep in perspective when Jack gives you those numbers of second in this particular defense, sixth in the other, there's 130 Division I teams, 130. And the Eagles are up there in the top 10 in a couple of those categories. What I get kind of just worried from, Jack, as a casual fan, is because the offense has sputtered so, the defense has been on the field a lot. And I'm just hoping, and against this game this weekend is going to be an asterisk. Anybody that plays that team, you know, for the rest of the season can make it an asterisk. But you just hope that the defense doesn't tire, or because as a unit they're on the field a lot, that they're not subject to more than the usual share of injuries.
No, sure. And that's any game. I mean, sure. you try to get out of a game with as healthy as you possibly can. And certainly, you know, when you play a number one team in the country like Alabama, who is, I mean, arguably, you know, right, most talented team in the country. I mean, you know, five-star guys up and down. They're too deep. You know, this is the first number one team we've played since we played the Crimson Tide back in 1980. We lost that game 42-7. In fact, we were ranked in that game as well. We were 20th in the country, and of the nine games where Southern Miss and its opponent have been ranked, three of those have come against Alabama. One of them was that game. There was the 1999 game where we lost 35-14. Alabama was 14. We were 20. And then, of course, back in 2000, where we shut out the Crimson Tide 21-0, we were the 25th ranked team in the country, and they were ranked 13th. So it's a series with a lot of history, and you know, certainly, you know, it's one that's never been played outside the state of Alabama, so that's kind of interesting as well.
And never will be.
No, probably not. No, but
never will be. Luke, get in there.
One thing will never happen also is they'll never have officials outside the Southeastern Conference also. I could be wrong on that, Jack, but it always happens. You know, in the pro throw game, which was my senior year, we were driving pretty late late in the third quarter, and we were going in to tie it. And just magically, the sprinklers come on. I mean, just come on, stay on the field for 5 minutes, kill the momentum. We stall for a field goal. I'm holding for McCaleb, and I'm like kneeling in water. I mean, it is bound to happen. But, I mean, talk about Jack, too. I mean, it's going to be a very hard weekend for the Golden Eagles. But, man, what a historic place to play. And one of the things that I'm excited about is you get a guy like Ty Keyes, you get some of these young guys, and they get to play in one of the best, you know, environments, most historic places in college football. I think that's probably the biggest benefit this weekend is to put, you know, our guys in a big-time atmosphere to get them ready for conference play.
No, I agree. And you know, you go over there, you play your tails off, you play as good as you can, you play for as hard as you can for 60 minutes, and then you know what? You get ready for Rice, because, you know, win or lose on Saturday, I mean, it doesn't have any effect into what, you know, we need to do, and that's, you know, to try to win a Conference USA championship. And so, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, that's, you know, Rice is a game that you know is going to be a big one for
far
us.
More importance.
Yeah,
absolutely, far more importance. Hey, I want to go back just for a week. We mentioned this, but you were there when it happened. Supposedly, like, you know, you're in charge of the press box and you're in charge in those press conferences after the game. But apparently Frank Gore Sr. just kind of took over that press conference after the Grambling game. Is that right?
He didn't take it over. He was
in that in a joking way.
Yeah, no.
In a jesting way.
He was there. He was there. I honestly, I didn't know who he was at first. And then it took me a minute because, you know, you're so focused on trying to make sure everybody has stats after each game. You're trying to make sure that that everybody's ready to go. You're trying to make sure your coach is there. You're trying to make sure that your players are going to get there. So your mind is kind of going back for make sure somebody's taping the interview. So you're not really cognizant of who is in there around on the fringe. You just care about that little media conference area. And so I looked, and I saw him. I said, that guy looks familiar. And then I realized that's who that was. So,
hey, Jack, you were at practice today. How would you describe the morale of the team?
Oh, I think fantastic. I mean, Coach Hall said it was, one of the best offensive practices we've had all year, and they got it. I mean, they got after it. I mean, it's fun to watch them practice because, they go out there. They don't practice. They don't go three and a half hours. They go out there. They get their work done, and then they leave. And that's just kind of it's the way they do it. They get a lot of things done in a short amount of time. I know a lot of people think an offense that hasn't shown up yet, but they're getting better each and every week, and so just got to trust the process and keep I know it's tough. You only get 12 chances to do it, but I think after this week, our goal is to play as well as we can in conference and go after another conference championship.
All right, Jack, always a pleasure having you on the show, my friend, and we'll look forward to having you back on the Eagle Hour real soon.
All right, guys, y'all be good.
All right, Jack Duggan, everybody, Sports Information Director, Southern Miss. But go to the Big Easy next. Stay with us.
Southern Miss to the top. To the top. You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Campus Bookmark, campusbookmark.net. That's where you go to get your Southern Miss apparel. At least you should be going there. They're on Hardy Street right across from the campus. You can shop them online 7 days a week at campusbookmark.net. And we hope that you do. Want to thank Jack Duggan for joining us in the first segment. And now we're going to go down to the corner of Adeline and Magazine Streets. And the beautiful city of New Orleans, and that's where we find Patrick McGee this afternoon. Did I get that right, Patrick? Adeline and Magazine?
It's Aileen Magazine. A-L-I-N-E.
I just hope you're not down there, Patrick, with holding up a sign that says, "We'll write articles for food."
That would be a first, though.
Yeah, there we go. All right, Patrick, of course, now with NOLA.com and keeping a close eye on the New Orleans Saints for us. But first, before we get to the Saints, Patrick, what about the fire at the Superdome yesterday? What can you share with us about that?
Well, I was off. I was off yesterday, and I'm off today. And I was just sitting here looking at my Twitter feed, and then somebody, it looks like the Superdome's on fire. And it was a fairly legitimate fire. Apparently, something went wrong whenever they're using a pressure washer up there trying to clean the roof. Something caught fire. There was one person that was injured, taken to the hospital, but he seems to be fine. And I went to the Home Depot in the afternoon yesterday and looked up, and there was kind of a nice, healthy black mark there on the side, on the roof of the Superdome, because they were kind of on the side. But it's, it's weird. It's been a weird season. I don't even know what could happen next. The Saints are supposed to be coming back to town next week. It's just one of the many weird things that's kind of happened to the Saints here through the early stages of the season.
I guess they're working out at their facility there in the New Orleans area, though, right? Is that where they're practicing?
No, they're still in Fort Worth.
Really?
That's where they've been practicing. They're supposed to return next week, ahead of the Giants game.
But now here's a situation where it's difficult to get people to work at all because the government is essentially paying people to stay home, and you got this one poor guy who goes on top of the Superdome.
Yeah, to pressure wash the top of the Superdome, yeah. You're right. Yeah.
Whatever he's getting paid,
he should get doubled, yeah.
I agree.
All right, Patrick, I know that you and Luke are hoping for some home cooking. I'll let Luke get in here and bemoan what happened to the team and get your explanation about what happened Sunday. Go ahead, Luke.
Patrick, the Saints rushing attack was just slightly better than Southern Miss's, but you know when Kamara goes eight rushes for 5 yards, we got problems. And you can talk more about this, but I mean a lot of people didn't realize Saturday it came out Saints were going to be missing, you know, several coaches. I don't know how if that figured in, but just looked like Matt Rhule and Brady were steps ahead of Sean Payton in this one.
Yeah, it was one of those games. There were a lot of things kind of going against the Saints. Had multiple players out on defense. I think that kind of hurt them early, especially on defense. They kind of got on their feet there in the second half. But yeah, the 7 coaches out. That's going to make things a little different. So preprations weren't the greatest or up to par what they're used to, and I think that just kind of played out. But there really wasn't any excuse for how badly the offensive line or Jameis Winston really played. I thought, you know, Kamara was just kind of a victim of the circumstances more than anything. It was a really poor performance, really, in a lot of different ways for that offense, and it was surprising to see them really kind of take a step back. But again, no side of the ball, you know, on offense, you really have to be on top of your game every week to go in and be prepared to face these defenses. And Carolina obviously is pretty good defensively this year. And they just got kind of overwhelmed, and Winston just kind of, you know, he looked like himself, he looked like the Tampa version of Winston there at times during the game.
Hmm. Does that worry you guys from a Saints fan perspective? Is this the fear that maybe was in the back of everybody's mind about Jameis Winston?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, is he going to be good consistently, or is he just going to, you just don't know which guy you're going to get from week to week, and that's, you know, Sean Payton's not going to accept that over time. You kind of know what you're going to get out of Taysom Hill every week. You know, he's not going to be perfect, but you know you're going to be able to, you know what you're getting. And with Winston, it's if he proves to be unpredictable over these next few weeks, I mean, there's a chance that, you know, if we see more of what we saw this past Sunday, he may not be the starting quarterback in the second half.
It was the first interception, Patrick, that I was just like, okay, there's Jameis. We have found the real Jameis. He's getting pulled down, you know, he's in the left side of the line, and he just literally throws up like a shallow fly to center field. And, like, literally the Panther safety just sat there under it and caught it. And I was like, okay, that there he is. Yeah, I've been waiting on him. And that's the type of, to your point, that's the type of stuff that Sean Payton will not allow.
No, he's, you know, they kind of let, you know, Jameis run with it in Tampa. Eventually things kind of changed there at the end of his tenure there. But Sean Payton has a lot of trust in the Taysom Hill, likes Taysom Hill. He's not afraid to go to him if this trend continues.
Hmm. Who do the Saints play this week, guys?
They're playing at New England. That's
unpredictable.
That's one of those games you really don't know what's going to happen. There's a bunch of kind of new faces on both sides for the team. So it's kind of one of those games where you go in and, you know, anything can happen on Sunday.
All right, Patrick, your thoughts about the Golden Eagles. We were talking to Jack Duggan earlier in the show. They're playing really well defensively. Played, I thought, an outstanding game Saturday night defensively. But talk about offensive woes. They start with the offensive line. You got this, this basically a baby playing quarterback that nobody really expected to see this year. So you can't really blame everything on him. I think that would be terribly unfair. But you and I and Luke talked earlier before the season started about the effort that went into recruiting offensive linemen, how big they were, how enthusiastic they were. But this is a really poor start from an offensive perspective, from the perspective of line play, Patrick.
Yeah, well, I mean, I did expect more out of this line. That's a group they really bolstered through transfers and stuff. You know, their starting five is a good, solid, I thought coming in was a solid starting five. I didn't see them kind of really kind of, you know, dominating the line of scrimmage or anything like that. But overall, they had the numbers to work with when it was kind of a concern maybe coming out last season. It is kind of surprising to see them go like this, but, you know, you just don't know. I mean, I don't know why they can't really run the ball. I mean, that's, or at least they didn't this past week. I mean, that's something that's really got to be a centerpiece of this offense. But It's one of those things to where teams are going to know if they stop Southern Miss from running the ball, they're going to beat them. Because, you know, the passing game just isn't going to be great until, you know, just something clicks there. It's going to be a struggle in the passing game, having Ty Keyes out there at such a young stage in his career. He just wasn't meant to be out there. So, you know, defenses know that if they really kind of get in the box and put a bunch of guys in there, they're going to be able to probably slow them down running the ball, and that's really going to limit the offense as a whole.
Back on the NFL front, Patrick, one of the things that people don't like about these rule changes, and it seems to be universal, the taunting rule. Now that every player seems to be getting flagged for taunting, and the increased incidences of targeting that we happen to be seeing, and a lot of people saying, you know, it slows down the game. It's just not the game of football in general. What sort of things are you hearing about the new taunting rule and how often it's being called, and the targeting rule, and how it has also increased?
All I can really speak to what I've seen this season, and I've seen the taunting calls really both more on college, in college, and then in the NFL. And some of them were justified, some of them were overblown. But the targeting, I'm a big supporter of the targeting. It's not always applied, you know, in a great way or whatever. But these guys have got to learn how to tackle the right way, or they're going, you know, they're just going to shorten their careers, or they're going to shorten somebody else's career. You know, launching yourself headfirst into another guy's helmet is worthy of a penalty. I'm not saying it's perfect every time, but I think the targeting rules need to stay. And I haven't really seen that misused this season in terms of targeting. Maybe some of the calls, I thought some of the roughing calls there with the Saints and Panthers were kind of quick trigger just from what I saw in that game. But, you know, the taunting, they could probably dial it back a little bit. But just from the examples I've seen, they were probably, most of them were probably deserved.
There was one Monday night game or early in the college football season, I think, or where there was three targeting calls.
Ole Miss and Louisville.
Yeah, in the first half.
Four.
Right. Four, yeah. In the first half.
Ole Miss and Louisville, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, there was one play where they could have called two guys for targeting. Yeah. That was a game where it's the first game of the season, and guys are just being sloppy with the mechanics on tackling. And it's just watching them like, when are you going to realize that you can't, that's not how you're supposed to tackle in the first place? And it's just not, for the long run, it's just not good for the game to have that as part of it.
All right, Patrick. Well, thanks for joining us as you do every week. Enjoy that good New Orleans food. Real quick, where have you eaten so far? Because that's the eating paradise of the world.
Well, Luke pointed me to Mahoney's, which is basically right across the street from me. And that was a fine, fine po' boy. And the best chicken sandwich I've ever had is from Shia, and I've already ordered it twice in 2 weeks. It's the chicken schnitzel sandwich, and it's amazing. It is amazing.
Well, you enjoy yourself, Patrick, and think about us, okay, when you're dining on that New Orleans cuisine. Look forward to talking to you again next week, buddy.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Patrick McGee, everybody. Now with NOLA.com.
The chicken schnitzel?
Chicken schnitzel, I believe.
Can we say that on the air?
Yeah, I think we can.
Kelly had a chihuahua named Schnitzel one time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We'll be back.
Southern Miss to the top.
Eagle Hour continues in the middle of the week. Appreciate you tagging along with us. You can always listen to the Eagle Hour live 1 to 2, but if you miss it, you can listen on demand at supertalk.fm or Apple Podcasts, Google Play. We're out there in the stratosphere, in the ether, in the land of audio archival digital files. All you got to do is just find us. I mean, just punch it into, this is for Bob and Kelly, just punch it there into the Googles and you shall find us. And if you've got an Alexa device, you can actually ask Alexa to listen to the Eagle Hour and it'll happen. Anyway, we're out there in podcast form. If you don't catch us live on Super Talk Hattiesburg, Super Talk Laurel, Super Talk Southwest, Mississippi, and we appreciate everybody joining us every day from 1 to 2 or at your time on demand for the Eagle Hour. Third segment brought to you by 4th Street Trivia tonight at 8 o'clock. $8.95 lunch every single day. 4th Street, proud sponsor of the Eagle Hour. It is Bob Getty, Luke Johnson, and Kelly Sander. That's us from the First Bank Studios in Hattiesburg. And Laurel, Southern Miss, taking on Alabama. If you didn't know that, you've been living under a rock. 6:30 on Saturday in Bryant-Denny Stadium in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And as we think about this, I was on the football team for 5 years. I dressed for four of these games. I played in Legion, but I never played Bama in Legion. The last time the Golden Eagles beat Alabama, it was in 2000, when they shut them out 21-0. That was in Legion Stadium or Legion Field in Birmingham. Every game that I dressed out for was in Bryant-Denny Stadium. And, I'm sure both of you guys have been to Southern Miss games. But there, man, so many memories, and it was like what I said to Jack earlier, Bob. I mean, this is one of those weeks you get to play the number one team in the country, and you get to play them at their place. And it I always remember Bama wasn't ranked that high. We played some ranked Bama teams, but man, it was extraordinary to go into a historic place and play college football. And that's like I told Jack, Bob, that's what I think is the best thing, the best approach, the best mindset for this week for Southern Miss.
Well, there's no question. I've been to a lot of Southern Miss Alabama games, really never missed one, many during the Bauer era and even before when Jim Carmody was there. I was there when Jim Carmody beat Bear Bryant's Alabama team 38-29. That was an incredible day. I remember two things about that. I remember that after the game was over, we wandered into a hotel there in that area. We got a little mixed up as to where our car was, and they were having a big Alabama Alumni Association dinner in there, a big buffet. And, heck, they invited us into the buffet, and we ate with the Alabama folks because they were just, you know, they were first, just really first-class people. And I didn't know it then, but I asked Jim Carmody about that actually on this show. There's a famous picture, Kelly, you've seen it in my office, where he's shaking hands with Bear Bryant. And I asked Coach Carmody, do you remember what was said that moment? And he goes, I absolutely do. Coach Bryant said, great game, Coach. If you played us again next Saturday, you'd beat us again. Coach Carmody replied, Coach, we don't want to play you again next Saturday. So that was the great day. I was there the year that the Bobby Collins team kicked the field goal to tie Alabama. That was a big – that may not sound like a lot, a tie, but tying Alabama back then was a really big day. And, you know, so there have been a lot of great. I saw a lot of close games that Southern Miss lost, but were very, very competitive with Alabama into the fourth quarter, well into the fourth quarter. So, yeah, Luke, there's a good history there. And it's not that way now, of course. But really, in all honesty, name me a college football team that goes to Tuscaloosa and doesn't come out with their, you know, butt whipped. Who is that?
Well, you're competing against several things when you go to Tuscaloosa, and we won't mention the others. But Kelly, another one of those close games, I didn't play in it. I was still a kid. But what was it, 94 when we were winning, or 95, and Brian Bergdorf throws a pass literally at the end of the game and actually beat Patrick Surtain?
Last play of the game.
I think it was right. Was that, Kelly, was that 95, Bob? Was that 95? Is that when that was?
I don't remember the year, but I was there for that. Last play of the game, Patrick Surtain shoved to the ground by the receiver, as I recall. Shoved literally to the ground, catches the ball, touchdown, Alabama wins again.
No flag.
So I had about that much sympathy for Mississippi State last week because I've been to many of those games. How about it, Luke?
Yeah, in 2003, so we go over there, and Dustin had a difficult game a few before. Damian Carter was still starting. So we go to Bryant-Denny, and I punted like eight or nine times. Mid-third quarter, I drop a snap. I get hit. Ball comes out. They recover. Nasty bunch holds. Next punt, it's a high snap, and it drew me to the right. I just tried to get it out. It got blocked, and really nothing I could do about that. Next punt, we're at the hash. And Coach Bauer, when he would call these, he would do it at the last second. I'm thankful I didn't have time to think about it. I'm out on the field at the hash, and he starts yelling, green, green, green. And that was a fake punt call. So it was like a 17 to 19-yard kind of back shoulder fade. If we don't get the catch, they'll PI us. The defense will. So Ettrick Pruitt's out there, and I am about to throw a pass in Bryant-Denny Stadium. We completed it. It was like a blur at the time. The next year, Or let me go back to that to what I was saying that for. So Eagles are down 17-3. And the next ensuing kickoff, Johnny Eubanks house this one for 93. I mean, hit the sideline, nobody's around, house it. Dylan Kleckler is like 20 yards behind John Eubanks. Eubanks is probably on the 30 or the 40 on the right side going to the house. Dylan engages an Alabama player on the entire other side of the field, 20 yards behind at the numbers, and gets a holding call. There you go, Bob. That's all you need to know. You play more than Alabama when you go to Tuscaloosa.
Well, I think you're alluding to some other things. Like I said, we don't want to sound like crybabies, but you know, and of course we joke about the check. You know, is the check signed? Has the check cleared? Is the ink on the check dry? And several people, you know, have asked over the years, you know, if there are such thing as money games, why not play three or four money games? And here's the answer to that. I mean, on the surface, it seems reasonable. All right, if you're making $1 million to go to Alabama, why not play Auburn and get $1 million from them? You know, go somewhere else and get $1 million from, you know, wherever. And the reason that you don't play three or four money games in a year is because you owe it to your athletes to put them in a situation where they can, most of the time, compete, you know, and have a chance to win. So you don't want to ever totally put money ahead of, giving your athletes a chance to win. So that's why, you know, there are such things as money games, but, you know, maybe one or two at the most per year, particularly in football.
Except in the late 90s and early 2000s when our non-conference slate was like Bama, Nebraska, A&M, and then we would play like a top, you know, 20 or top 10 TCU team. I mean, that's what would happen. But
yeah, but remember though, Luke, that TCU came here. All right, Texas A&M would play in Jackson.
It was a conference game. I'm not saying it was a money game. I'm talking about from a ranked.
Oh, I got you. Because I was going to say Nebraska came to Hattiesburg as well.
I was there that night.
They came in 03, played in that one. But, you know, when we would play at Bama, I mean, it was really cool because we would, most of the time, we would stay at the Galleria in Birmingham. So we would drive through Tuscaloosa on Friday. We would go to Bryant-Denny, and Fridays were always fun when we just kind of did a little workout in the stadium. We'd kick a little bit. Offensive linemen would like just be throwing the football and running routes. It was real laid back. We'd run through a few things. So then we'd get in the buses and we'd go to Birmingham on 459, stay at the Galleria, wake up early. Kickers, we would walk around the mall like before it opened. That was our position meeting because we're kickers. We'd get back in the bus after we ate pregame. And then we would get on 459, and you guys know right there at McCalla where 459 merges back into 59. The Alabama Highway Patrol would shut down 459. They would back 59 up for about a mile. Our buses would go around everybody. We had the entire Interstate 59 from Birmingham to Tuscaloosa by ourselves, and they would bring us in. Now, here's the thing. When you got to Tuscaloosa, they could have been 99 years old. They could have been 19 years old. When you come in on McFarland and hit Bear Bryant Drive and get off at Bryant-Denny, everybody was telling you that you were number one. It didn't matter who they were.
Oh, yeah, the Italian number one. That's what you're referring to. Am I right about that?
There you go. We knew it. They knew it, too.
All right, when we come back, I got a surprise for both of the boys on the show. Now, we can all talk about our memories of seeing Alabama. We can talk, Luke can talk about his memories of playing against Alabama. But you guys, we're going to bring a guy on the show here in the last segment that beat Alabama, that brought the Crimson Tide Nation to its knees.
You got Jesus on the phone?
And he knows what it feels like to watch the empire fall at his feet. And that'll be next on the Eagle Hour, Kelly. You just sit there and think about who this might be. Luke, you do the same thing. Think about who this might be. A man on the Eagle Hour that knows what it's like to bring the Crimson Tide to its knees. That's next on the Eagle Hour.
Southern Miss to the top.
To the top.
You're tuned in to the Eagle Hour.
Fourth segment on this Wednesday brought to you by DBAT and D1 Training on Hardy Street in Hattiesburg, DBATHattiesburg.com. Always check the website. Upcoming camps available for instruction. And, of course, at D1 Training, you can get in great shape. DBAT D1, home of the Luke Johnson 5-2-40. They did that for me. They can do that for you. Luke Johnson, Bob Getty, Kelly Santer from the First Bank Studios in Laurel and Hattiesburg. All right, Bob, you kept us in suspense. You went out there into the guest list and brought in a superstar.
You know, we've all talked about our Alabama experiences and how we've witnessed them. And Luke, obviously, the guy that can talk about playing against them. But, ladies and gentlemen, I brought onto the show the man who slayed the dragon, the man who brought the mighty Crimson Tide to his knees with a 52-yard field goal, the one and only Jim Stump Taylor. Stump, how did it feel to bring the Crimson Tide to its knees?
You know, with my Alzheimer's today, it's been so long, Bob, I can't remember. Oh, I tell you, no, it was a great feeling. It was a great win. You know, we were celebrating because our captain, our quarterback, was back. Favre was back for his senior campaign, and you know, to win games like that, you've got to play well, and things have to go your way. And you know, we had a couple of interceptions and this kind of thing. I know one for a touchdown, and. It was a great feeling. There was probably a minute or two left on the clock when I kicked the field goal, and it was just the jubilation. The only thing I remember more than anything, the first guy that met me on the sidelines was our illustrious college president.
Yeah.
Aubrey K. Lucas was the first one in my arms when I came through.
So, Dr. Lucas. Take us back. When you go on the field, the team's getting ready, everybody's getting ready to get in their stance. What's going on through your mind with the opportunity to beat Alabama or be the guy that misses the field goal at the end of the game?
I missed enough of those. So, you know, Luke will tell you the same thing I'm going to tell you. You don't think really about that. I mean, you know the gravity of the situation. I think today, reflecting back on it, it's a bigger moment now than it was then, you know. And it's just like our guys going to play this weekend. You know, they know Alabama, they know all of that, they know a lot of guys that play there, but they're all the same age, they're in the same business, they're thinking they're going to go win, you know. And so you go out there and do what you've practiced all your life to do. You know, you put yourself in that scenario in your head, whether it was in my grandmother's backyard kicking over her clothesline, you know, this to beat Alabama or whatever. And I don't remember a lot. I remember there was a timeout called, and which I didn't pay much attention to timeouts. I mean, I just stayed away from everybody and got ready to kick.
No, and I know what the coaches were saying, Stump, on that sideline. They're going, all right, coach, you're putting – our success on the shoulders of Stump Taylor? Is that what I'm hearing here?
That's what you're hearing. You know, we were on the 35-yard line for three plays in a row before we didn't get a single yard, you know. In three plays, we don't get a stinking yard, and I'm going out there to kick a 52-yard field goal, you know.
And in fairness, it was into the wind.
Right? That's what I'd say, you know. The wind had been at my back. I'd kick one or two through the uprights on the kickoff. But the wind had been really howling. Huh. And we had kicked a 50-yarder in the first or second quarter going this direction. And it changed. It wasn't a powerhouse wind, but it was a wind, you know.
Yeah. And Stump, young people don't realize that you were like the Mark Mosley of Southern Miss football. You were a straight-on kicker. And that's a different art form than what they even know about now.
Man, probably one of the last. Mm-hmm. In college football, that would have been 1990. Mm-hmm. I think I remember maybe Florida had a kid. Luke, you may remember Florida may have had a kid that kicked off that was straight on in that time period. And Virginia Tech was the last school I knew that had a couple of straight on kickers. But I was the dinosaur.
Jim,
there's no doubt.
Jim went to kicking camps in junior high with Tom Dempsey. I mean, that's how far back it was.
Tom was actually the instructor. What are you talking about?
Now, Stump, if I were you, I'd have that shoe in a glass box, and I'd show it to everybody that ever came near me. You don't do that kind of thing?
I don't even know where it's at.
Really?
No, I guess I left it. I don't know. Man, when I got through, I was done. I didn't want to think about football. I had all I wanted.
Did it have the square toe stump?
It did.
Did it? Gosh, man, we got to try. We'll try to locate that shoe. It's got to be somewhere.
Did it have the Velcro strap that pulled up the end?
I didn't use a Velcro. I used a Velcro strap in high school, but I didn't. I used just a regular string in college.
Well, Stump, I just tell you what.
Jimmy Taylor.
I'm telling
Little
you
Jimmy
what.
Taylor
I'm so proud
there.
You're my friend, and I tell people all the time, yeah, my friend slayed the dragon, buddy. That's exactly
that
right.
And what was big about that game, that was Gene Stallings' first home game.
It was.
And Stump took
Take
them
that.
Down.
Take that, Stallings.
So
they won national championship, what, 92? And we should have beat them in 92.
92.
So Stump makes this kick to win the game. And look where he is today. It hasn't done him a darn bit of good.
Yeah, the kick had shape. Nothing to do with it at all.
All right, Stump. We love you, buddy, and always glad to have you on the show.
Hey, guys, appreciate it. Y'all have a great one. All for right. The Miss to the Top.
There we go. The great and the one and only Jim Stump Taylor. Oh, that's fun. All right, Kelly's got the show tomorrow. Who got real quick, Tanner?
Hunter Atkins from the golf team is going to be on tomorrow. We're also going to reflect, sadly, upon the passing of Sid Weatherford and the many contributions he made to the athletic department. And buying or selling, we'll take a look at every Conference USA football team tomorrow.
Southern Miss.
To the top.
To the top.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.